This season of NYG is brought to you by our friends at Harvest, makers of awesome web software you can use to track your time, plan projects, and get paid. I love it, I use it, and I am so excited to have their support this season. So do me a favor, check them out for free at getharvest.com, and if you're ready to upgrade your account, use code KNOWYOUGO to save 50% off your first month. That's getharvest.com, offer code KNOWYOUGO.
Welcome to Know You Go, the show about being ambitious and sticking together. I'm Jen Lucas.
I'm Cattell Ledoux.
And I'm Sarah Wachter-Betcher. And we are back for season three. We're so excited to be joined today by Jolie Kerr, who is perhaps best known as the voice behind Ask a Clean Person, which is a podcast and a column and so much more. She is an expert at cleaning basically anything, and like, we mean anything. And she's also incredibly funny. We ask her about becoming a cleaning expert, the politics of domestic bliss, and of course, how we can all be a little bit less gross. But first, welcome back, friends.
Yay!
Woo! How was your off season, you two?
I don't feel like I took any time off, but like, other than that part. Now, my summer break, as we say, has been pretty good. I didn't like go to the beach and get a tan, but I did have a little bit of downtime and that was really helpful. It gave me a little bit of a recharge, but then I got super duper busy again. And so right now I'm in the middle of just a lot of travel and workshops and client stuff. And so I feel like I'm a little bit stretched thin, but I'm also feeling kind of like energized about it. So, you know, could be worse.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. I feel like my summer was looking kind of slow and low key for a while, and it got kind of packed up too. But I did get the chance to take a little trip with my mom to visit my grandmother who lives in the south of France, which I know, poor me. But we went down there, and then we also made a little side trip to Switzerland, which I had never been to before. Holy crap, Switzerland is fucking gorgeous, and it's also fucking expensive. So I didn't do as much shopping as I would have liked to, but I got to see a lot of beautiful sights.
That's amazing. Did you eat chocolate?
Yeah, I ate chocolate, and Sarah, you'll appreciate this. I mean, you both will. I ate a lot of French fries.
I would definitely appreciate that.
I always appreciate French fries, but one thing that our listeners might not know is that like French fry is like Cattell's favorite food, or like, yeah. I don't know. It's like you require a French fry course at every meal. Not every meal, but if available.
It's totally true. You said that the other day when we all got together, which was so nice after having had a little bit of time away, and we got back together and had a happy hour, and you said that. And I told John, my partner, and he was like, that describes you to a T.
I mean, I think we can all learn a little something from that mentality, right? Like, don't we all need a French fry course sometimes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jen, what about you?
Well, it's been a little bit of a rough summer, I gotta say. We've had a baby sick, I had a sinus infection. My husband was in the hospital for a little bit. And if you're a subscriber of our newsletter, then you know a little bit about all this. But on the good note about all of this, I'm pregnant again.
Woo!
Woohoo! Yeah. Baby number two on the way.
How you feeling?
It changes day by day. Some days I feel a little bit like I want to throw up still. Some days I forget that I'm pregnant, whether that's because I'm like working or chasing around a toddler. And then I'm like, oh shit, I'm pregnant. And we're like, you know, more than halfway there. So the other day, like lying in bed with Sutter, I was just like, hey, we should like probably figure out what we're doing about this second child. Hey, yeah, we gotta probably like do some stuff.
Yeah.
Jen, what are the things you're feeling like prepared or unprepared about?
Well, so it's like a little confusing, right? So we're having another boy. So we're gonna have two boys. So we've got like clothes, right? Because we have all of Cooper's clothes that we saved and stuff. But then I'm like, and we have a crib because my sister had given me her old crib. But I'm like, okay, yeah, we're set, right? And then it's like, oh shit, we don't have another mattress. Like, so this baby's gonna be born and she's gonna be like, oh, where are you sleeping? So it's almost like there's this like comfort in like doing it again because you have this experience already. But like, it's almost like, oh no, it's like there's still stuff we need and there's still stuff we have to figure out. Like, do we need double strollers? Where are they going to sleep? How are we going to manage? Like, everyone does that whole advice, like sleep when baby sleeps, right? But how can you sleep when baby sleeps when you also have a toddler? So I don't know. Some of it is like, we'll figure out when it comes. So I'm like not that worried, which is a weird feeling for me to not be that worried.
I kind of want to stop and celebrate that, though.
I know. And I feel like that makes a lot of sense. Like, you have been around the block, so to speak. On, you know, you, I mean, at least like this time, it's not a complete, I don't know, like you've done it. So it's like, you know, a little bit about what to expect, which I'm sure can feel reassuring.
Yeah, like we know your kid and like he's awesome. He's doing great. Look, he's walking around. He's saying stuff. He's awesome.
He's certainly eating. Can tell by the mess all over my floor, which we'll probably talk about more today. But yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's weird. Again, there's this like point where like before having a kid, you know, I had like all the time to like think about all these scenarios. And now I just don't. Because you're already like, we're already struggling for the time, like finding time without kids, right? And then every time you add something, it's like one more bit of time. So now I'm just like, it's sort of nice to be like, I could worry about it or I could not. So
yeah,
I'm just sort of doing a lot of not trying to worry about it and being like, we'll figure it out.
I mean, I think that sounds completely solid.
Well, let's hope so.
And like, you will figure it out, yeah. Right? Like, yeah. I mean, obviously you're super competent. Look at you and look at like all of the other shit you've already figured out. You got this.
Yeah. We'll have a 2-year-old. So we'll like have a babysitter, right?
Yeah.
That sounds right.
I always joke with my sister. I'm like, when do you start like asking them to do stuff for you?
Cooper has actually learned how to take stuff out of the washer and put it in the dryer.
Oh,
but then he'll want to put it right back. So, and then he'll like get bored halfway through and walk away. And you're like, okay, well, you're part of the way there.
Hey, I mean, hey, that's a start. That's great.
Yeah.
So speaking of pulling things in and out of the washer, we talked to somebody for the show today all about cleaning. And it was just so fucking great. I'm feeling like we should get to the interview with Jolie Kerr.
Let's do it. Hey everyone, it's time for Career Chat brought to you by Shopify. Each week, they'll be bringing you info on a cool new job or a tip for advancing your career or landing the perfect gig. Let's hear the first one.
Hey, this is Holly, and I work on UX recruitment at Shopify. One thing that we look for in applications is when your personality shines through in your portfolio. Avoiding things like unsolicited redesigns and focusing more on projects that highlight your interests and your individuality can really set your application apart from the pack. Showing us your involvement in the design community is a huge bonus and can emphasize your impact even if you don't have a ton of professional experience under your belt.
Ooh, I love this advice. If you're interested in working with people like Holly, you're in luck because Shopify is hiring. Visit shopify.com/careers for all the info.
Jolie Kerr is a writer, cleaning advice columnist, and the host of the podcast, Ask a Clean Person. Her book, My Boyfriend Barfed in My Handbag and Other Things You Can't Ask Martha, was a New York Times bestseller. Welcome to the show, Jolie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. We had some technical difficulties and I got to do your intro twice, which was awesome because I still had just as much fun the second time doing it. So, Ask a Clean Person started as an advice column on the Hairpin in 2011. How'd you get into the advice columnist role?
Totally fell into it backwards. Like, it was the most unplanned thing in the world. The Hairpin had started and the editor of the Hairpin was like, I really want you to write for the site. And I was like, yeah, I do too. I'll think of some ideas and let you know. And another friend of mine was like, you should write about cleaning. And I was like, Tyler, that is the worst idea you've ever had. Who would want to read about cleaning? That is so boring. And he was like, no. I really think it's a great idea and I think you should do it. And so I mentioned it to the editor of the Hairpin and she loved the idea. And I was like, I still do not see this at all, but like, okay, if more than one person is saying I should do this, I'll figure out a way to do it. And what I figured out, at least for me, what made sense in my mind was to do it as a Q&A style column, an advice column, to have people come to me with their actual problems, messes that they needed cleaning up, problems that they had in their life, whatever it was. And I could offer them some solutions to their problems. Otherwise, I was like, I don't want to write like today you should make your bed. tomorrow you should do your laundry. Like, that didn't seem compelling. But giving people, which, like, I guess I do sort of write that now, but like, I don't know. I guess I figured, like, in my real life, in my friend group, I've always been kind of the fixer friend, like the one who people come to when there's a problem that needs to be solved that maybe they don't want to go, like, ask their parents about. So I was like, okay, if I put that attitude into whatever this cleaning thing is going to be, that makes sense in my mind as something that would be compelling for people to read. And so we came up with Ask a Clean Person, and I thought that it was going to, like, last for a month. Like, I sent out an email. I did not have any faith in this concept at all. and I sent out, to get the column going, I sent an email out to probably about 20 friends. And I was just like, hey, I'm starting this thing for the hairpin. Do you have any questions about cleaning? And I thought I would get back like 3 or 4 like pity emails of someone being like, how do you fold a hoodie? Oh no, I got back like a deluge of questions just from this like small group of friends that I sent this email to. And they were wild. Like, some of them were like things like, I have this like silver trophy that's like been in the family and it's all tarnished and I don't know what to do about it. I know the answer is silver polish, but like how? All the way to one of the very first questions I got from a friend was about male sexual fluids. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe there is something here. So we launched the column. And again, I was like, well, maybe this will like run for a month or two and then I'll kind of peter out. Within 2 weeks of running the column, I didn't need to pull on questions from my friends anymore because I had so many reader questions that had come in the first 2 weeks. And I was like, oh, okay, this is great. I really like this.
Why do you think it struck such a nerve at the time? Like, why was that an immediate hit for people?
Gosh, I still don't think I know the answer to that question. I mean, I was the one who didn't think it was a great idea. I mean, I think the thing is that cleaning is so incredibly universal. Literally everybody has to do it. It touches every part of our life from, you know, just like the mundane, like you got to wash the dishes, to our hobbies. When you're really passionate about something, keeping the things that are involved in your hobby, whether it's playing an instrument or playing a sport, keeping that stuff clean becomes very important to you. So there's such a spectrum of how cleaning touches all of our lives. And it's just a universal thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's such a bigger topic than people think it is, right?
Absolutely. It's wild to me. When I tell people what I do, like, I always describe myself as being like a doctor at parties. Like, everyone wants to show me their proverbial mole, right? They want to like, they want to either like, tell me about a horrible mess they've made, ask me a question about how to like get a stain out of something, or they want to tell me some secret that they know about cleaning. It's an amazing thing. Like I go, and the thing is, like, I socialize and thank God I love my job, and I don't mind hearing people's stories and learning their weird tricks and stuff. And I certainly don't mind helping people when they have questions for me. But every time I leave a social gathering, I'm like, I must be the boringest person in the world. I just talked about cleaning exclusively for 3 hours. But I think the thing is also, especially with the column and the tone of the column and sort of where it was placed in the world and place and time, was that there was just nothing like it. You could get cleaning advice, you know, at Good Housekeeping, or you could get cleaning advice at Real Simple, or you could buy, you know, Martha Stewart's like homekeeping handbook that weighs 20 pounds. But you couldn't get cleaning advice that felt real and relevant to your life. And I think that the Q&A format of the column was really what created that atmosphere for people, is that you're reading the letters that people are really writing to me. You're getting a glimpse into their life. You're not only getting advice on how to remove Sharpie from toilet seat, you're finding out how the Sharpie came to be on the toilet seat in the first place. And that's very amusing for people.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking a lot about this in advance of talking with you, because it seemed to me like the column fit really neatly into the kind of the overall tone of the hairpin at the time. Like, there was Ask a Queer Chick, or later on there was Ask a Swole Woman. So these are the sort of like, I looked at them as like these kind of modern takes on a very traditional format of advice columnist. And to me, there was something about the way that your column worked and some of these others that it felt both like simultaneously really sincere, like it wasn't a joke, but also sort of could be very funny and also kind of subversive. Yeah. And I'm really curious, like, How much of that was intentional on your part? How much of that was like just kind of the nature of the hairpin in 2011? Like, how did that develop?
I think that it's a little bit of both. I mean, certainly it was the nature of the hairpin in 2011. I think that I always think of the OG hairpin as being very akin to the OG Sassy magazine. There was just like a real editorial sensibility that we all had. I think that we picked up from one another, and certainly that we all picked up from Edith. And I think that you talk about the kind of sincerity of it. That was, I think, really one of the defining things about the hairpin, was that our ethos was very much, and it was never stated outright. It was just sort of how the voices that Edith was drawn to all had this commonality, that we all felt like it was okay to like things. And that was a little bit new for our corner of the internet, which our corner of the internet grew very much up out of like kind of the Gawker sensibility. You know, the guys who started the All, who then spun off into the Hairpin, they came out of Gawker. And so there was kind of that, like, in our corner of the world, that kind of like snarky, it's not cool to like thing tone. Whereas at the Hairpin, like, we were like, it is okay to like things. It's okay to be nice. And actually, that's nice for the readers, and it's nice for us, and it makes our lives better. I think that was really genuine, and I can't think that came through. I do think there was also a lot that was really subversive about what we did, in that we were very voicey and we were true to who we were with our voices. And so that became subversive. It was subversive to have a Seven Sisters educated woman writing about cum stains. And that's who I am. I mean, that was real. And that was like, from the jump, that was how we were. And I think that's why it resonated so much with people.
I am very glad there are women writing about cum stains, because, like, you know, they're real.
Yeah, they are real. They're very real. And actually, well, I'll say one thing that surprised me so much over the years is that I have a pretty like big audience of older women, like I was like 60 plus women who read my column. And I'm always like, what? Like, why? And my theory on the reason that they're reading it is that they're looking back at themselves when they were the age of my target demographic and thinking, gosh, I really wish I had this in the 60s and 70s. Like, yeah, you know, young brides weren't calling home to ask mom about cum stains. Yeah. And I think there's like, I think there's kind of a girl power thing for that generation of women to read and look and think like, look at how far we've come, that this exists in the world. And I wish I had had this, but I'm glad it exists now. And that's part of like what we fought for with our brand of feminism and so on. So, I mean, I see it as just like part of the evolution of the women's movement, that like, you know, there is a definitely an anti-housework bent, and that's a good thing for feminism. And I'm very like rah-rah on that. But I think that it's come full circle to be like, but we still have to clean the cum stains, you know?
Yeah. And by like age 60 or 70, I really hope I figure that one out. So maybe they're just like, yeah, please tell me. I've been searching for this for decades. So Julie, how did you become a clean person? Have you always been a clean person?
Oh yeah. Born this way. 10,000% born this way. There was like recently like a Twitter thing that was going around that was like, tell your most on brand story from early childhood. And I actually told a story. I have literally never told a soul this story until I shared it on Twitter. When I was at summer camp, sleepaway camp, when I was about 10 or 11 years old, we had laundry service. So you'd put all your dirty camp uniforms into your underwear and all that stuff into your laundry bag, and it would get sent out, and then it would come back. And one week, for some reason, and I remember doing it, I don't remember why I did it, I folded all of my dirty clothes before I put them into my laundry bag. And they were dirty, but I folded them, which is insane and a crazy thing to have done. I can't tell you why I did it. I just did. And later that week, when the laundry came back, our bunk got scolded for sending clean clothes to the laundry. And I just kept my mouth shut, because I knew that if I said like, no, they were dirty, that it would look like I was lying. Because it was such a crazy thing to have done, and no one would have believed me. So I just kept my mouth shut and didn't say anything. But the fact of the matter is, I wouldn't have been lying. They weren't clean clothes. They were dirty clothes. They were just folded. I'm not normal. And I really have always been like this. Yeah. So you asked like, how did I become a clean person? Really kind of just always this way. And I think like it's always surprising for people to learn that when I started the column, I was not a cleaning expert at all. I didn't consider myself one. I was just a person who knew a lot about cleaning. By the time I finished writing my book and moved the column away from the Hairpin over to what at the time was Gawker Media Group, I was like, oh, now I'm a cleaning expert. Like I just wrote a whole book about cleaning and now I really can call myself an expert. So that was when I made the shift between thinking of myself as a clean person and feeling comfortable calling myself a cleaning expert. That would have been probably in 2013. It's been 5 years now that I, you know, have billed myself as a cleaning expert.
So I think some of our listeners struggle with imposter syndrome, you know, where they doubt their credentials to be in the position they are. Did you struggle with that ever when giving advice?
No, actually, I didn't. I know you're supposed to say yes, but I didn't.
No, I think that's great.
I think the thing is that I, especially in the early years when I was not an expert, I put a tremendous amount of research into answering the questions. What happened early on in the column was that within like a month or two, I started getting questions that I just didn't have any clue as to what the answer was, but I was like, but I'm going to find out. And so I put a tremendous amount of research into finding the right answers for the questions that I was being asked. And then I started building up this body of knowledge. And I think that because that was the way that I approached the job, where like I didn't bill myself early on as an expert. I was just like, I was a clean person. I'm going to help solve your problems. And if that means that I'm going to have to do like 3 hours of research to figure out how to get this one weird stain out, I'm going to do that 3 hours of research. And because I did that, and because I think early on in my career, I had started off as a fact checker at Sports Illustrated. So I started off with a journalism research background. I felt very comfortable with the methods that I was using. So I felt confident in the information that I was providing to people and the answers that I was giving to people, because I knew that it was based in my experience having been a researcher for, you know, big magazines in the late 90s and early 2000s.
How did this become your full-time thing?
So when I first started writing the column for the Hairpin, so the Hairpin for about 2.5 years, I was working full-time as a business development and marketing manager at law firms. I had a big corporate job. I wore suits. I wore pantyhose. I made six figures. Like I was like, they called me corporate Barbie. And I started doing the column on the side as a hobby. I was totally unpaid for it. And so I would write in the mornings, in the evenings, and on weekends. It literally never occurred to me that this would be a career at all until a publishing company came and asked me if I was interested in writing a book. And at that point, I was like, huh, maybe this is like something. And so I had to, you know, go through the whole process. I had to get an agent. I had to write a proposal, you know, all of that stuff that you have to do. And I got the book deal. And at that point, because I was accepting payment for the first time for that work, I had an ethical obligation to tell my manager at the law firm, because for at law firms, even if you're not a lawyer, there are conflict issues that come out if you're doing side work. So I went to my manager and I was like, I have been keeping a secret. I have like a whole other life that you don't know about. And she's like, what are you talking about? This is so wild. This is so cool. I'm so excited for you. At that point, we agreed that I was going to move to a part-time status while I was, you know, basically make time to write the book and all of that. And then after the book came out, I basically was in a position where I was like, yeah, I can write full time. I did at one point, maybe about 6 months after the book came out, I did go back to a different law firm as a consultant. And within like 2 days, I was like, nope, this is not what I want to be doing at all. It was supposed to be like a year long consulting gig. And I think I stuck it out for like 4 or 6 months. And then I was like, bye guys, I'm out of here, going back to writing.
So you left that gig and you started throwing yourself full time into writing and then now into the podcast, which I know is a pretty big part of Ask a Clean Person today. So Yes. There were some topics that we saw had come up relatively recently on the show that were specific to trans audiences. And I was really curious about that. So something I think is awesome, like not only talking obviously about things like cum stains, but getting into all kinds of topics that people don't traditionally think of asking an advice columnist. So you were talking about washing a chest binder, mm-hmm. and then also talking about how to keep your shirts clean after top surgery, if you have to put like ointment or whatever on stuff. And so I was really interested, like, How do you think about the sort of inclusivity of what you're writing about and sort of the topics that you cover and making sure, I guess, that you're answering lots of questions from groups that maybe other people aren't speaking to?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things about the podcast, so I'm partnered with a podcast network that handles all the technical stuff and all of the business side stuff. But the show is independent in terms of I have full editorial control over it. And I don't answer to anybody but me. And so that freedom allows me to do, you know, what I would refer to as a niche episode. Certainly that episode that you're talking about, I think it was episode 126, that had to do with questions from people, trans people, on cleaning issues that they're facing that are specific to their community and really are not going to be relevant to the majority of people listening to my show. But I think that it's important for me to take them on because they're real and legitimate questions. And if one person has that question, it means at least, you know, 20 other people do too. I think also my listeners know I'm quite liberal. And so representing communities that are oftentimes marginalized is really important for me. There's another kind of element to it, which is that historically, I have had the format of the show has changed. It's bounced between a guest format and a permanent co-host. And when I do have a co-host, it is always my preference that co-host be a man and preferably a straight man, because I don't really want the show to turn into what I refer to as two bitches gabbing about cleaning. Because I think that reinforces like a hideous gender norm about cleaning that I do everything in my power to like rail against. And so one way in which I approach the show in terms of the topics that I cover is one to think about, you know, certainly, marginalized audiences who aren't represented as well, which I think the trans episode is a good example of, but also to do a lot of episodes that are geared towards like, you know, the straight white man. Like, you know, one of my most popular episodes is my hockey gear episodes, all about how to wash hockey gear. And that's not a male problem. Women play hockey too, obviously. But, you know, generally speaking, like that's one of my dude episodes. So I just always want to have a balance really in thinking about who the shows are for and making sure that it's as diverse as possible in terms of the topics that I'm taking on, but also the audience who they're geared towards.
Yeah, I love that. And I mean, there's a lot in there that I would love to talk about more. So one of the things that you brought up was kind of the gendered aspect of cleaning or people's perception of cleaning. Like cleaning is tied to domesticity and it's definitely historically pretty feminized. Mm-hmm. We don't typically expect men to give a shit about whether things are clean or to like take the lead on cleaning. I mean, plenty of men do.
Yeah, but that's the thing they do. They really do. I mean, I could say it till I'm blue in the face. Men clean. They care about cleaning. The biggest problem is that they are not socialized to clean from a young age the way that women are. My attitude about writing about cleaning for men and podcasting about cleaning for men is just to say, like, I'm not going to wag a finger at you. I'm not going to shame you for not knowing something. I'm just going to teach you how to do something. And now you know. And I think that in my experience, men have found it very empowering to read my columns, to know that they're geared towards them. They are written for a male audience. They're not condescending. They're funny. They're oftentimes raunchy. I mean, obviously, I'm a very raunchy person. I always say, you know, clean person, dirty mind. And I think that it's just like very relatable. And I get just beautiful, touching feedback from the most unlikely sources. You know, you just wouldn't imagine that like a bunch of guys reading like a sports gossip blog would be like obsessed with a cleaning advice column, but they are. They're like, this is just, we're so happy when you show up with your weird advice and like the weird questions that people are asking. I really learned something and I can't believe I'm reading a column about cleaning, but here I am. And it's just really nice for me.
Yeah. One of the things that I notice about it too is that it kind of gives it that like cleaning is for everybody. Like everybody's gross and messy. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs to clean things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm wondering if you've thought about how your work plays into changing people's perceptions about cleaning and changing people's perceptions about sort of divvying of that labor in households or the way that assumptions are made about who should be cleaning what. I mean, do you hope to get people thinking about that kind of stuff? Even though obviously for the most part, you're like, also you just want to teach them how to clean a blood stain out of something.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. And I think that's part of the socializing. I made a really, really deliberate decision when I left the Hairpin. I was like, I want to be writing for a male audience and a female audience. It's really important to me. Because at the time, especially, there were like a lot of think pieces going around about the division of the unfair division of labor, and you know how women you know really carry so much more of the load when it comes to household chores. And I was like, look, all of that is true and good, but you're really not going to get any progress by just writing these like scoldy thought pieces, wagging your finger at men, telling them all the stuff they don't do. That's not going to motivate them to do it. The way to motivate them to do it is one to acknowledge they haven't been socialized and they haven't been taught. They don't know how. They don't know how, you know, like let's start at the fundamentals. You can't expect someone to do something if they don't know how to do it. So I was like, let's just go teach them how to do it. Then they're going to be thinking about it and it's not going to change overnight. But this is part of the teaching and socializing process that will bring us up to a little bit more equality when it comes to household chores. So, you know, you teach a guy how to get his pit stains out. The next thing that happens out of that is that he starts noticing other laundry issues, or he has a sense of pride in the fact that like, oh God, I got the pit stain out of my shirt. I'm so happy. What else can I do? Like, I didn't expect to feel happy after doing laundry, but I do. Where else can I get that high from?
Yeah. I was thinking a lot about the whole thing about like, it's both not knowing how to do it, but like you said, it's like noticing, right? Like noticing the things that need to be done, or even like recognizing that they are things.
Yeah. I mean, that's the socializing, right? I mean, you know, women are socialized to, you know, put the dishes away. Men aren't as necessarily as socialized. They're not even socialized to see it. It's like, you know, I hear people talk, women, mostly women. I know some women actually do this themselves too, but like, this is a refrain I hear from women all the time that like men leave the kitchen cabinets open. Just like walk away, like with the cabinet, like don't close the cabinet. And like, and they're like, I then have to go and I have to close the damn cabinet. Like, you don't even see it. I'm like, no, that's the thing. He doesn't see it because someone has always closed the cabinet behind him. Like, so you know, yes, of course it's frustrating. You get mad, but like, he doesn't even know he's doing it. He doesn't see it. He's not seeing it the way we see it.
This is why my husband had open shelving.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, I grew up in a household that was just kind of messy and not terribly gross or anything, but kind of messy. And so I am the one who didn't used to see the cabinet open, and or like, you know, you like make something and you leave things out on the counter. And my husband is he's a clean person. So he actually very much notices. And I think I've really like turned the corner on that one. Like, I put things away in the kitchen typically, you know, and I'm much more organized about it. But I go to like my brother's house and I'm like, why is this knife with mayo on it just sitting on the counter? Who are you?
Mayo freaks me out to begin with.
You're a grown man. Okay, so we have asked a bunch of questions that are like around how you started doing what you do and sort of like that whole kind of social or political framework it's sitting in. But we also definitely want to ask you a few questions that are a little bit more about the cleaning itself, if we could move to some of those.
Yes, you sure can.
So my husband and I, we have a pretty good division of labor here, or I should say we did prior to, we now have one son at home and we also have another one on the way. And everyone knows, like, we're all busy, right? We definitely have that busy thing, but like, how do we find time for cleaning when life gets so unpredictable with schedules?
I think probably, well, I know there's no great answer to that. I'm sorry. I can't create time for you. I'm magic in many ways, but I can't create time. I think one thing to think about is using small chunks of time for small tasks. So a lot of times people think about cleaning as kind of like, okay, I'm going to dive in and do an hour of cleaning and get the whole house clean all at once. And frankly, that's not realistic for most people. It's how some people work best. And if they do, that's fine. But you can get actually quite a lot done in 1 minute, 2 minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, much, much more than you think. So I think it's like a little bit of just grabbing, you know, a few minutes here and there to take care of things, just put things away, do a couple dishes, you know, load the dishwasher, whatever it is. So focusing on small tasks that add up is probably the right strategy for someone who's in your particular situation, which is short on time, busy, 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 want to stay on top of things.
Right. I love that. I mean, I try to do that sometimes with work too, like set aside, like here's 2 minutes to do an email or like that. So sort of same thing around the house, except the problem is when I'm home, the couch looks so good in those minutes.
Yeah, I know.
But then there's times, right, where I feel like myself and other people, they'll use cleaning to procrastinate doing other things, right? So maybe like, is procrastination the secret to cleaning?
I do that for sure, for sure. When I have writer's block, I'm like, oh, I'll just go clean something. Like, yes. And then, or like if I'm just being like, I shouldn't say like not even when I have writer's block, because I don't have writer's block that often. But like just when I'm being like a lazy writer, I'll just be like, oh, I'll just like, instead of writing this kicker that like will take me 5 minutes if I just actually sit down and write the damn kicker, I'll be like, I'm going to go clean something and I'll call it work. It's like really dangerous for me. I can always convince myself that it's work when really like, no, Jolie, you're procrastinating. Like, go write
that's
the kicker.
That's amazing.
Yeah, because writing is your work. The cleaning is not actually, cleaning your apartment is actually not your job.
I totally feel like I've never been cleaner than when I had a book contract. but when you're writing about the internet, like I do, then you have a whole other problem, which is that you tell yourself that doing stuff on Twitter is work because you're writing about it. And in fact, you are not only wasting time on Twitter, but like, have you been on Twitter? It's terrible. Anyway, back to the cleaning.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, you know, sometimes I'm like, I don't know. I got to put away my son's stuff. I'm really just being a good parent right now. It's not that I'm not getting to these 10 projects I want to do. So no shortage of excuses, I don't think. You know, recently I feel like in the last few years there's been a lot of attention to cleaning philosophies like Hygge or the art of tidying up. You know, how do we find the right balance?
I can't answer that question because what balance looks like for one person is totally different from what balance looks like for another person. And I think that like all of these philosophies are great. They're like diets, you know, they all work. You just have to find the one that works for you.
Right. It's so confusing because some people are like, get rid of everything. And then some people are like, surround yourself with comfortable, wonderful things.
Right. And you know, the thing is that for a certain set of people, get rid of all your things works and resonates with them. For another subset of people, you know, surround yourself with cozy plush things works for them. For other people, you know, Jolie Care, foul mouth, dirty minded, talking about cum stains works for them. You know, like, so
works for me.
I think, you know, I don't ever see people who espouse cleaning philosophies that are different from mine as being competitors, because to me, it's just all part of a landscape that creates a buffet for people to choose from and find solutions that are right for them. Like I really am in the business of solving problems. And so right. if someone is going to find the solution to their problem in, you know, the art of tidying up, by all means, I want them to do that. If someone's going to find the solution to their problem by, you know, reading my columns or listening to my podcast and feeling like, okay, I'm going to put on a lot of people. Actually, this is kind of a funny little like aside about how people consume me is that a lot of people listen to my podcast while they're doing their weekly cleaning. And I love that. I think that's like the best thing in the world. Like, cause they're listening. They're not cleaning the thing I'm talking about. They're not listening for active advice while they're cleaning. They're listening because it's like a way that they can pass the time. And people always say to me, they're like, it actually makes me excited about cleaning because you're so excited about whatever it is you're talking about that like, it makes me excited while I'm scrubbing the tub. And I'm like, that makes complete sense to me. I totally get it.
Oh my God. Yes. I've like binged, yeah, on your podcast this week, and now I've wanted to like clean everything.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. That's a lot of Jolie Care in 1 week. But yeah, I mean, it's so genuine, so I feel comfortable saying this. I have so much enthusiasm for my job, and I just love what I do so much that I can understand why it motivates people to clean. I get it. Like I get why listening to me being like hysterical about hand washing a bra makes people want to go like hand wash their bras. And I love that because I want everyone to hand wash their bras.
I've got a setting on my washing machine to do that, don't I?
You do. You do.
I feel so judged right now.
Yeah, don't feel judged.
Have a mesh baggie.
And the mesh baggie is fine.
And I air dry. I'm yes. doing okay, right?
You're doing fine. So we do. We just recorded an episode about bras, and I said exactly that. But yes, indeed, the mesh bag and air dry is totally fine. I say this all the time. First of all, I'm not here to judge at all. And also, I live here in the real world with all of the rest of you. And yeah, I would like you to hand wash your bras. It's actually an incredibly painless process. But I also completely and totally recognize that most people are not going to do that. And that's okay. So like, there are other options, the mesh bag, the delicate cycle, air dry. That's fine. That's totally fine. Do not feel judged.
I love it. And I feel like I'm like with you, like listening to you makes me want to clean out of excitement. Whereas like when I was younger, if I'd be like really unmotivated and hungover on a couch on a Saturday, I'd put on like an episode of Hoarders, because then it would make me get up and do something because I like feared myself yes. into cleaning my house. So,
but you know what? If that works for people, that's fine too. You know what I mean? Like if you need to be like scared straight by Hoarders to like put your underwear away, like by all means, whatever it takes.
So we're just about out of time. But before we go, we'd love to hear more about where people can get more Jolie and like what everything's looking like for you now.
Sure thing. The best place to get the most Jolie is to listen to my podcast. It's called Ask a Clean Person. It is available basically everywhere that you get podcasts. You should definitely consider downloading the Acast app. Acast is my wonderful podcast network. I love, love, love them. Their app is wonderful. And I am primarily these days writing for the New York Times. But I also have regular columns at Lifehacker and Jalopnik, and probably a new one rolling out sometime soon. And you can find me on social. I am very, very, very active on Twitter. I'm great on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at JolieKerr, JOLIEKERR. Same handle for Instagram. And on Facebook, it is facebook.com/askacleanperson.
Awesome. I can't wait. And I'm excited to hear more about this new thing that's potentially coming out. So thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really, really fun.
So at the end of each episode, we like to have a little bit of a fuck yeah for those of you who haven't heard our previous seasons before, where each week we just sort of celebrate something that makes us go fuck yeah in life. So Sarah, you got something for us today?
I definitely have a fuck yeah today because I'm feeling really good about some work I've been doing. So last season, we actually had Cattell's therapist on the show, Dr. Allison Chabot, and she was so encouraging about how you can go about finding a therapist and sort of recommendations for how to kind of like try out therapists and get a sense of finding somebody you really click with. And I was so encouraged by that because it was something I'd been meaning to do for a while and it's really daunting. And I just felt like, where do I even start? Well, I did it. So what I did is I actually asked Cattell if her therapist would have any recommendations for referrals, got a handful of referrals, called a couple of them. Just like she said, I took time out of my day to like have phone conversations with a couple different therapists. We spent like half an hour on the phone with each of them. And then I scheduled preliminary appointments with them because I liked them both and I just wanted to kind of feel it out in person. And I had both of those appointments this week. And it was a little bit funny to have like first-time visits with two different therapists in the same week where it's like, am I going to talk about the same stuff or whatever? But it was really helpful for having like this kind of direct comparison and feeling like I had basically somebody else to compare against. And so my fuck yeah is that I did that work. First off, like getting it together to make those phone calls and go through the process and figure out what your insurance will pay or whatever, like that is no joke. And then fuck yeah, I like both of them.
Yeah. Oh my God. Fuck yeah. I love this so much. I feel so proud of you. Seriously, like I think that's so awesome. I feel like this is such a like cool, positive story. Also, oh my gosh, what are you going to do? I mean, I'm sure you're still thinking about it, but you have to like give one of them a rose, right?
Right. Yeah. So here's my plan. So I was going to call them both and ask if they could meet me in a special location. And then I was going to make sure they're both there. And yeah, no, I mean, I guess I actually don't know what I'm going
to
do.
Cattell and I will hide in the bushes and wear an earpiece and we'll tell you what to say to each one.
Oh my gosh.
I like this idea so much.
So I have kind of a small lean in one direction with one of them. And I can't quite figure out if it's because I happened to see her first or if she was actually like clicking a little bit more. Like part of me thinks that I had a couple of like real eye-opening moments in the session with her that maybe were just because I saw her before I saw the other person, because they were both really good. I mean, first up, like I think the recommendations I got from Dr. Chapeau were really good. And I read about them and kind of like picked a couple who felt right to me based on their websites. You know, so it's like all along the way, I was kind of gut checking it. Same with the phone calls. So anyway, I don't necessarily feel like this one versus the other is much better, but obviously, you know, I got to make a decision. And so anything that helps make a decision at this point seems fine because like, I think that they'd both be great. So yeah, I'm going to kind of follow up on that. I'm giving myself a few more days to mull it over. And then I'm just going to try to get my shit together and go to therapy regularly with a therapist I actually like.
That is so cool. I love that. Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah.
That's it for this week's episode of Know You Go, the show about being ambitious and sticking together. NYG is recorded in our home city of Philadelphia and produced by Steph Colburn. Our theme music is by The Diaphone. Thanks to Jolie Care for being our guest today. If you like what you've been hearing, please make sure to subscribe and rate us. It helps more listeners like you find us. And don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter. We will be back next week with another great guest. Just a name. The map has changed.